For the past few weeks, we've been talking about the life you've always wanted. This is not meant to be some kind of a catchy slogan. Well, it is meant to be catchy because I want you to think. I want to get your attention, but it's not meant to be some cheesy late-night infomercial approach to life. We've been trying to base it on the scriptures. And the first Sunday, we talked about our raison d'etre, our reason for being, why we're here. And then the following week, we talked about growing our relationships, which really are the most important things in life. Our God is a relational God. He desires to be in relationship with us, and that affects our relationships with other people as well. And this morning, we're going to wrap this up by talking about stewarding your resources. What do we have? We often are tempted to compare ourselves with other people and think and focus on what we don't have. And the advertising industry is really driven by need and greed. It makes us anxious about what we don't have and encourages us to be envious and covetous of other people who seem to have more than us. Although we don't really know their backstories, do we? We don't really know the backstories of people who seem to have a lot more stuff than we do. We don't really know how satisfied they are with life. At any rate, I want you to use your imaginations this morning. Imagine, we're in church, and I want you to use your imagination. I want you to imagine yourself starting a new job. And as a newbie, you go through some kind of a training process or orientation process and likely a probation period so they decide to stick you around. Now, have you stick around? Now, with God, I don't think he goes through a probation process. Saying after 3 months, sorry, Rick, you're out. You don't measure up. When God adopts us into his family, he adopts us. But there is something to starting a new position and training and taking on the values of the company or business that you're taking on. And you need to ask yourselves a few simple questions. Now imagine yourself as a manager of a new operation somewhere. Could be a school or a hospital or a business. The owner has given you the keys to the operation. You have the keys to the building. And the owner tells you, you are in charge. I will check in with you at year's end. And by the way, I'm expecting big things from you. Kind of encouraging and challenging at the same time. So you gulp and swallow and you take the keys and you go on. Basically, you are managing that business for someone who owns it. You are what the Bible calls a steward, someone who administrates and manages a business or a household for the benefit of someone else. Now, who is our owner? If you've been looking at this slide, you should have the answer to this already. Psalm 24 says, "The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it." In the beginning of Genesis, God creates everything and puts Adam and Eve in charge in the garden to work the garden and take care of it. And it's clear that humans were created to work, and that work is a stewardship of all the creation that God has given. But the earth is God's. It's not ours to do with as we please. Man, if you run a business for someone else, you can't just treat it like it's your own. You just cannot. You're not going to last very long in the position if you abuse the privilege and the responsibility of managing a business for someone else. You're not going to last. So we need to remind ourselves who's in charge of everything. That's why it's a good habit to come together on Sundays or whenever possible to get kind of reoriented and recalibrated, because we tend to drift. If you've done any sharpshooting or hunting, you know you've got to align the sights on your rifle carefully before you go out. You might think the rifle is properly aligned, but it could be just a little bit off, and then you'll miss your target. In the same way, worship together, one of the benefits of worshiping together is reminds us, it sort of recalibrates us for the week, the coming week, saying, oh yeah, God is God, Donald Trump is not, and everything's in its right place and God is in control. Sorry, I couldn't. No more of that. But anyway, it reminds us that God is in control. Contrary to what we might see or hear through the news or social media, God is in control. And it's his planet, not ours. It's basic, but so fundamental to everything else we're going to talk about this morning. Okay, so God is the owner. What's our job description as someone who is a steward, or someone who manages what God has delegated? This goes back to Genesis chapter 1. Then God said, let us make human beings in our image to be like us. They will reign over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, the livestock, all the wild animals and the earth, and the small animals that scurry along the ground. I'm glad they put those in there. So you are Lord of the squirrels, along with everything else, apparently. This is what some theologians describe as the creation mandate or the cultural mandate. God puts us in charge of the planet. And when he says reign over all the animals of the earth, to reign over the environment, he doesn't mean to destroy it. He means to manage it. I grew up in a farm, and a wise farmer manages the land. He doesn't use the soil to try to suck all the nutrients out of the soil all at once. He nurtures it and tends to it and feeds it and plows natural fertilizer back in. That's the way it used to be in the old days. Nowadays, with factory farming, we try to suck everything out of the soil, and we're going to reap the consequences of that. God didn't tell us to cut down all the trees in British Columbia. A few years ago, Luann and I were able to go kayaking in Clackwit Sound. I don't know if you remember, but several years ago, there were a lot of protests in Clackwit Sound because people were literally chaining themselves to these old growth, the trees in the old growth forests. They are magnificent. A tree that's 700, 800, 900 years old. They're so big and so beautiful. And someone wanted to turn them into whatever we turn trees into. And fortunately, some people stood up in their hind legs and protested and said, no. I'm so glad they did. Because there's not much old growth forest left in Canada. Now, we're taught to manage the environment, to take care of it, not destroy it all in one generation. And unfortunately, the 20th century, some of the theology and some of the beliefs and business, people just went in and destroyed vast parts of the ecosystem that we're not going to get back, or not going to get back very easily. When I first moved to Winnipeg, 15 years ago, I went on a retreat with the ministry I was working with to the Fort White Center. And they've got bison there, right? They got about 20 bison. Anyone seen the bison at Fort White? Beautiful animals, just awesome. And I saw them. I was so intrigued, but I don't know why. I just got this tinge of deep sadness. Now, I've never been much of a tree hugger or environmentalist. I think I'm becoming more like that because I'm concerned about if my grandchildren are going to have any planet left to enjoy what I've enjoyed. But I remember having this deep tinge of sadness, thinking, it must have broken God's heart, because there used to be millions of bison in Western Canada, and now there's just a few. The irony is, we have a bison, of course, on our coat of arms and things like that, but there's not very many of them left in Manitoba. And people would shoot them just for fun. I'm not anti-hunting or anything like that, but when you just destroy a species just for fun, that's a sin. It's criminal. It's stupid. So our job description as stewards of creation is to manage it and take care of it and make sure there's something for the next generation to inherit, right? That's part of our job as God's stewards. Now, when you're being paid, you want to know, when you have started a new job, who ultimately signs the paycheck? Because that's ultimately who you're responsible to. Who provides? Who's funding this whole operation? What's behind that? And it says in Deuteronomy chapter 8 that God provides everything we need. Ultimately, we have everything we have comes from Him. And that should be quite obvious to any Bible-believing Christian, but it's not always the first thing in our minds. We go and we get a paycheck from whoever we work for, and it might be too little, or it never seems to be too much. But anyway, we go, and we put it in our bank and don't think anything more of it. But who actually gives us the ability to earn our wages? Whether we're self-employed or employed for someone else, who gives us the ability to earn our wages? Ultimately, God does. And here's a warning that God gave the Israelites in Deuteronomy. You shall remember the Lord your God. It is He who is giving you power to make wealth. Ultimately, who gives us the ability to earn our living? Ultimately, who provides the sales leads we need if we're in sales? Who provides the position? Who provides for us? Ultimately, it's God. He is the source of our ability to earn a living, whatever our profession is. Ultimately, it's God. Even if we're on some kind of social assistance, ultimately, it's God who provides for the government to provide for us. We're so fortunate to live in a country like ours that has a social assistance programs like we do. So ultimately, all these things come from God. Who pays the bills? Where does the money come from? When you start a new job, you're going to be evaluated. And this is where I want to land on mostly today. How are you going to be evaluated? We know who the owner is. We know what our job description is. We know ultimately where the money comes from. How are we evaluated? Jesus told a parable in Matthew 25, and it's called the parable of the talents. Now, when I use the word talent, I don't mean the ability to juggle or national, like America's Got Talent. A talent in this context was an amount of money, roughly the equivalent of about $1 million today, okay? You could do the math later and tell me how close I was, but let's say, for example, a talent was about $1 million Canadian dollars today. So this landowner goes and he leaves servants with varying amount of money. To one servant, he gives $5 million. To another servant, he gives $2 million. And to a third servant, he gives $1 million. And he says, I'm going away, guys. I want you to invest this money. When I come back from my trip, we'll see how you did. Well, the first one with the $5 million invested the money very wisely, and he doubled the money. Wow. I'd like to get his number. Anyway, he doubled the money, and he ended up with 10 talents, or $10 million. The second one, who only had 2 talents, well, he got to work too, and he was very shrewd and very wise, and he doubled his money as well, and he ended up with 4 talents instead of the original 2. The third servant only had 1 talent, but it's still $1 million. But he was afraid, so he buried it. He didn't do anything with it. He didn't even put it in the bank to make interest. He was so scared of being held accountable for what he was going to do with the money that had been, what had been entrusted to him, he just kind of buried it and hid. Master comes back. He meets the servant who's originally given $5 million and he doubles it and says, way to go, that's awesome. That's great. And the second servant who's given him $2 million, they have a little job review, and he goes over things and says, well, you doubled the money too. That's awesome. Well done. And then he goes to the servant who had $1 million and he said, so, time to report. Let's bring the balance sheet. Where are we at? Oh, boss, I'm sorry. I knew you were a really tough evaluator, and I was scared, and so I just sort of hid the money. Here's your money back. And he said, you, no good, so-and-so. Get out of here. You're fired. You missed this opportunity, and you totally disobeyed my instructions. In fact, I'm going to take the talent you had and give it to the guy who went from $5 million to $10 million, and he gets it. What's the point of the story? Jesus is trying to remind us that we have been entrusted resources in our lives. Now, it doesn't matter if we have five talents or one talent. It doesn't matter how much we've been given, in a sense. It's not, the point of the story is not but how much we've been given. It's we're really evaluated on what we do with what we have. Some folks just seem to be born into wealth. They may be born into a fairly functional family and get a kind of a head start in life. They do well. They have resources. They have natural abilities. They have spiritual gifts. They just seem to be well-resourced. Some of us don't have those advantages, and instead of the five talents, maybe we're in the category of we just have one talent. But we're evaluated on what we do with what we have, because everything we have comes from God, right? Try it again. This is your cue. Everything we have comes from God, right? Right. Okay, good. Take that home and give thanks. But the challenge for us today is, how do we steward our resources? How do we manage them to invest in God's kingdom and what he's doing? Because we're going to be evaluated on that. And we don't want to miss out on the opportunity, because we do it not out of fear. It's too bad. This third servant, the one who buried his talent, he didn't really understand his master's heart. He wasn't willing to take risks. You know, it's risky for us. If God's given us a natural ability or a spiritual gift, or he's given us financial resources, it takes risk to invest in God's kingdom. Tithing is kind of a crazy concept. Let's talk about that. Tithing, in the Old Testament, God commanded his people to give 10% of the income off the top to God's ministry. That's crazy. Who would do that? When Luann and I first got married, in order to help us with our budget, we started up a separate tithing account, because we thought maybe it'd be easier if we just put it right in there, right off the top, and wouldn't have to think about it so much, and maybe we wouldn't miss it if we did it right away. You understand what I'm saying? So we did that, and I remember going to the bank account to set up an extra bank account, and I was why do you need a second account? Well, this is what it's for. And the teller looked at me, he's like, what in the world are you thinking? So it's kind of a crazy concept, right? And the point I'm making about tithing, it's investing in God's kingdom. But according to the New Testament, you don't have to tithe. You don't have to do that. You can give a lot more. Most people will say, well, the tithing's not taught in the New Testament. And they're kind of like, what? You're right. You get to be generous. You get to live a lot more, give a lot more. And they kind of back off from that. The whole point is, though, we want to invest intelligently in what God is doing so we can be part of that and gather that blessing. Now, there have been times when I haven't tithed or haven't given faithfully, and that's on me. That was out of fear and holding back, and that's on me. That's my responsibility. And I've missed out, personally, because I've held back. And that's wrong. It's a bad example for my family and for other people. So I like to invest in what God is doing, because it makes me think I'm part of that ministry. Even if I'm not in that particular country or that particular location, I love investing in a place like this, because for over 100 years, people have invested in this particular ministry here. And God has given us such a strategic place in Winnipeg. We are stewards, not just of this building. Although the building, I'm glad the roof doesn't leak so far. Right, Henry? Garth? You know what I'm talking about? But we need to steward this building and this ministry so we can continue to let people know what Jesus is all about. That's why we're here. And it's a privilege. It's exciting. I'm hopefully it's not drudgery. It's like, oh, I'm going to church again. I'm going to keep a hard grip on my wallet in case the preacher starts talking about money. Well, I'm talking about money today. That's okay. It's just money. God will give you what you need. He might even give you more. And you don't tithe so you get more money from God. We tithe out of love, or we give our offerings out of love, and God looks after us. So it's a risk. The servants who doubled their money took a risk. They invested their money wisely. They invested their resources wisely. So when we invest our money in God's kingdom, it's a risk. But there's no reward without risk. When we invest our time in someone, when we invest our time in a ministry, there's a risk with that. We might think, huh, that's a waste of time. But as you know, if you're involved in ministry, so much of it is like farming. You sow seed, and it looks like nothing is happening for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And all of a sudden, a little shoot pops up out of the ground and going, it works! In the same way, if you're investing, especially, I think, in children and youth, and just investing in people, it can take a long time before you see the seedling pop up out of the ground. But all of a sudden, we say, whoo, I had a God sighting this week. You never imagine what so-and-so asked me over coffee or something like that. It's just this encouraging little sign that there's something going on there and that the time and prayer that I've invested in this relationship, God is doing something. See, when we're partners with the owner, right? God makes things happen. We just try to follow his instructions by being good stewards and taking risks by investing in the resources he's given us. We feel like we have a spiritual gift, and God's given everyone spiritual giftings. And we think, you know, I think God has given me, he wants to give me the gift of encouraging people, coming alongside them and just kind of giving just the right, saying the right thing at the right time. And I'm not sure if I should go up to that person and try to be that encouraging thing or not. I'm not sure how I'd be accepted, but I'm going to take a risk and do it anyway. And hopefully if we get some kind of positive feedback, it's like, oh, that wasn't so scary. I could probably do that again. I could probably do that more often. Or just exercising a spiritual gift, learning how to use it, and taking a risk. We're stewards of what God has given us. And that's a beautiful thing, because then we're partnering with the Creator, right? And we're going to be evaluated on those things. To those who use well what they're given, even more will be given, so they will have an abundance. But from those who do nothing, what little they have will be taken away. If you don't do anything with the resources that God gives us, they just kind of shrivel up spiritually, you know, and you just kind of become this hardened person in a shell, timid and defensive and alone. And that's sad. It's sad when you meet people like that who say they follow Jesus, but their lives don't really reflect it. It's not like everything goes well when you follow Jesus. You know as well as I do that we encounter headwinds and challenges and hard times, but the people who seem to thrive and prosper are the ones who invest the resources they've been given in the kingdom, and they take risks for God. Just to recap, God owns everything. He's given us resources. You know, he's given us a job description to be stewards. Ultimately, everything we have comes from him. He's the source of everything we have. And we're going to be evaluated on what we've been given. And again, it's not so much about what we have, it's what we do with what we have that counts. That's very important. So, as Christians in the 21st century, I think we need to embrace this bigger picture of stewardship. Again, it's not just when people talk about stewardship, they think of collecting money from the church, for the church, which is helpful and strategic. But it's about stewarding what we have and who we are. Now, here's the challenge. How do we make this sustainable? One of my favorite words in the English language is the word sustainable. How do we keep going? We're worried about our planet as the population increases and pollution increases and our resources dwindle. How can we live sustainably? And I think God wants us to live in a sustainable manner as well. Oh, by the way, I forgot to talk about reward. Wouldn't it be awful to talk about everything without being rewarded? What's the payoff? The payoff is whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It's the Lord Christ you're serving. So this is important incentive to keep us going. When life gets hard, we're not doing this, we're not just gritting our teeth and doing it because we have to or out of fear of judgment from the Creator. We're doing it out of a response of gratitude. Jesus has done so much for me. How can I offer that back to him? It's a natural response. Grateful people are giving people. Grateful people take risks for God's kingdom. Grateful people make excellent stewards because they understand the big picture. So there are rewards for serving Jesus. Not that we do it just to get a reward, but it's kind of a bonus. We get Jesus plus, plus, plus. And that should encourage us to be faithful stewards. Now, how do we keep this sustainable? How do we make it sustainable? There's a challenge in us doing things on our own energy and not allowing God to renew us. That's why God commanded us to keep a Sabbath, to take a break. I think for one 24-hour period in a week, that's how we set things up for people just to rest and recoup and recharge spiritually so they can continue to be good stewards. Otherwise, you just bleed a person dry. You just suck them dry. It's interesting. I was reading the history of communist Russia. I believe at one time they tried to eliminate the Sabbath. They tried to eliminate because they thought it was just kind of a religious thing. And they had all these five-year plans of what they were going to do and what they were going to accomplish, and they eliminated the day off, and they found out that it was very non-productive to not have a day of rest in the week. Isn't that interesting? How they kind of confirmed God's command that we take a Sabbath, that we take that break. And that's how it's sustainable. Robert Murray McShane was a 19th century preacher in Scotland. He was bright. He graduated from Edinburgh University at the age of 14, and he became a pastor of a church of over 1,000 people at the age of 23. But he worked so hard that his health finally broke. He did a lot of writing, did a lot of preaching, but his health broke. And at the age of 29, he wrote, "God gave me a message to deliver, the gospel, and a horse to ride, his physical body. Alas, I have killed the horse, and now I cannot deliver the message." What Robert Murray McShane missed out on was the fact that life has to be sustainable. We talk about people, well, it's better to burn out for God than rust out. Well, burning out for God doesn't prove anything to anybody. It just makes you foolish and makes you a bad steward of the resources that God has given you. So it's got to be sustainable. This is an interesting proverb from the book of Ecclesiastes. "Using a dull axe requires great strength, so sharpen the blade." That's the value of wisdom. It helps you succeed. Every once in a while, we need to stop and sharpen the axe. I've split enough wood. Hopefully that's all I'll ever have to do in my life. But I've used an axe enough to know that this is true. And it seems like kind of a waste of time when you got a busy day and a lot of wood to split. Why do you just sit and sharpen, sharpen, sharpen? What a waste of time. Just get at it. And of course, you know, because you're wise, you know that there's wisdom in stopping to sharpen the axe. It makes you more effective and focused in your work, right? So as good stewards, we need to remember who our boss is, what our job description is, ultimately who pays the bills, that there will be a reward. We'll be evaluated on what we do as stewards, but there is a reward at faithful stewards at the end, and we need to make the stewardship thing sustainable. Now, I've been wrestling with how to do this in my own life, and I need to read you a paragraph here that I've written out and prepared for the church today. This week, the elders of Elam Chapel approved my request for a leave of absence for the 4 weeks of February 2017. You just heard me refer to the axe. I need to sharpen my axe. And over the past several months, I've had a growing awareness that I've been attempting to minister out of an increasingly empty well. So it's time for me to take some time away from active ministry here at Elam and ask God to fill that well through some intentional, personal, and spiritual renewal. I'll be working at the office this week until Friday afternoon. And in case of an emergency, the church staff will know how to find me. But I really appreciate your prayers for me at this time because I want to be a good steward of what God has given me. And I need this time to refresh and recharge. Okay? Let's pray. Father, we thank you for what you are calling us to do in life. Thank you for all the resources you've given us. We realize that everything is yours. Everything comes from you. And I pray that you'll help us to be diligent and courageous in taking risks for the kingdom. Thank you that there's even a reward for us, for those of us who are faithful and stick at it. So I pray that you would bless us today and show us how to apply these truths. In Jesus' name, amen.